This fella Ronaldo is a cod.
Arsene Wenger's been in Japan for a year. He doesn't know anything about English football.
I'm so happy, believe me. I'm so happy. Happy New Year.
Con Giovanni, incredible. Dribble, 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 dribble.
We will go away, baby!
It's the history of the Tottenham.
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
Welcome to day three of our end of season category awards and looking back on the 2020-21 season. We've done four categories already. Now for our final two. This one is called the most surprising change in form, which is a neat way of kind of encapsulating players who did much better than we thought they would or much better than they did the year before, but also players who were a lot worse than the year before. There was actually quite a lot of players, I think, who surprised us with the way that they played the season. And I suppose there's a lot of mitigating sources around that we'll discuss. I'll start off with the nominee list here. Jamie Vardy, Sergio Aguero, Gareth Bale, Timo Werner, Sadio Mane, Emiliano Martinez, Mikel Antonio, Kelechi Iheanacho, Patrick Bamford, Jesse Lingard, Ike Gundogan, Luke Shaw, Alisson Becker, John Stones, Anthony Martial, and Raheem Sterling. Where do you want to start with this list, Andrew?
I think we should split it up between the players that had a good season and players that didn't have a good season. And then we can, modulate it afterwards. What do you think?
So who had a bad season? We'll start that way.
I think, obviously, if we go to the top of your list, Jamie Vardy had a bad season. To his standards, he still scored 15 Premier League goals. He's still another 7 assists, I think. But he's definitely slowed down, not necessarily on the pitch in terms of his speed on the pitch, but he's slowed down in terms of his contribution and overall importance to Leicester City. He didn't contribute what you would have expected. And if it was the Jamie Vardy of last season and the team of this season, I don't think there would have been any question around Leicester City's Champions League qualification. As it was, he was someone who was playing a lot of minutes, but not contributing a lot of goals or goal-scoring opportunities to his team. So I think that is a perceptible decline that may have been a surprise to a lot of us, including myself. I didn't think he had it, especially how he kind of started the season relatively hot and then just faded away as it went on. And despite him playing, as I said, a lot of minutes in the season, I think he played 34 games in the end. And he did have an injury, I think, at one point during the season as well, which was a bit worrying. But I did think he would get into the England squad or he would return from international retirement come the end of the season. And as it turns out, he hasn't. And it's not looking like he'll get that call up unless there's a bizarre series of unfortunate events striking in the strikers between now and the next 2 weeks. I don't see him getting in there. So, yeah, I think he has had a perceptible decline this season. And maybe it's the beginning of the end for him and his, chase for the top goal scorers. Halley's man next year. We won't see him in there. After that, I think there are more obvious declines after that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was going to say, just obviously we'll keep looking at the bad ones first, but I would almost cut him immediately now because I completely agree with your points, but he still, I think, overall had a solid season.
Yeah,
but
it's just something
warning
to note.
Signs.
Shout out to Jamie Vardy and his, his decline this season. Something to watch out for next year. As a potential, for those who are interested in fantasy football, maybe don't pick him as much.
Whereas the next four here on the list, Aguero, Bale, Werner, and Mane, I think they're more in the conversation here. Gareth,
yeah,
maybe
like,
less so.
Well, yes, so he didn't come from... Gareth Bale, I had him down at the signing of the season, at the end of the year. And, he did get a nomination for Player of the Month in for May. So there is something to be said for that. He came into form right at the right time, just maybe not for Spurs. So maybe for Wales, and that was his overall goal for the season, was to get enough playtime to get in form for Wales. And that, he's done that, to be honest. And he's scoring goals at the right time of the year. But really, they brought him in as a star player, someone to lead them on, someone to relieve the pressure on Son and Harry Kane. And he didn't do any of that. And he didn't contribute a great deal all season. He was absent in probably the most important matches of their season, the only match of any importance he really showed up in was the game at the end of the season against Leicester City, which just ensured that they finished ahead of Arsenal and not much else. Did they get into that European UEFA Cup. What is it called now?
The Conference League.
Did they even get into that with that win? I'm not sure if they did.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, they did. Like, that's really what he did at the end of the season. Other than that, I'm sure they brought him in on a big wage with great expectations. And his form, compared to when he left the club and compared to when he was playing for Real Madrid, which I know he didn't do a great deal of last season, it is not of his form was not of a player that is a Real Madrid player. Comparing him to the likes of, Odegaard, who also left Real Madrid on loan to join Arsenal, like, the both were. Which one do you think was more likely to be a Real Madrid player? And it definitely wasn't Gareth Bale.
But he did. I think he did at the end of the season. Like, I do think that was enough for him to maybe just float by in this category, given some of the other names here. Like, he was fine. Like, I didn't have. You had him down in the season. I wasn't expecting him to be that good.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he'd be better than he was, but I didn't think he'd be, you know, the Gareth Bale that we remember from when he was there the first time. You know, I figure there was a reason that Zinedine Zidane had absolutely no interest in picking him. It wasn't just a personal issue between the two of them. I did figure fitness had to play a part in it as well, and I think kind of that was the key thing, is Gareth Bale just has not got the legs that he used to. And for that, I think, you know, I wasn't too surprised with how poor he was. You know, it's when we look at Timo,
maybe
Werner,
we should have known like how many good, yeah, like how many good golf courses are there around London. I don't think there's that many, so maybe we shouldn't be surprised. You know,
whereas with Aguero, like, his first goal came in March, I think it was. Like, that's staggering, really. Like, he didn't have the best end of last season, but I don't think any of us figured him to be such a minute part of Man City season this year.
Yeah, like, I thought he'd be right up there at the goal scoring charts. I thought he'd be contributing a lot. I thought Man City would do well with him this season, get one more good year out of him. He's always confounded expectations. He's always come back when players, and myself included, have thought he's past it. But this season, it turned out he is past it. His injury record, you know, he was always missing time on injuries, and, you know, he'd suffer and come back and score more goals. But this season, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't make the comeback. He couldn't make it happen. And yeah, if you're talking about perceptible declines, I think he is one of the most staggering ones of the season. I think other ones were very minor and very, you know, under the radar, but his one was obvious when he came back and was fit, not getting near the Man City starting 11. Even when they didn't have a striker on the bench, other than him, they wouldn't bring him on. And I think that was very telling about how his season went.
Yeah, he didn't even start his final game for the club. It was he came off the bench for the last 20 minutes, and there's no, there's no plan for him to play in the Champions League final. Like, the match on Sunday was very much a send off. It wasn't, oh, you know, we've got a Champions League final on Sunday or Saturday, you know, he'll feature in that.
Yeah,
And that's a big fall from grace from where he was.
Absolutely,
about 15 months ago before the lockdown. So. I think
maybe the lockdown had an impact on him. Like,
yeah, maybe. I don't remember if he ended up testing positive for COVID or not. I'm sure if he did, that would have played an impact, but I can't remember. But for that, I think we should keep him in the list for now. And yeah. similar for Sadio Mane, who I don't think any of us expected him to be as poor as he was this year. That was a shock to me. We talked earlier about their front three at Liverpool. And Salah still had a really good season, and there's a reason he's not on this list. Expectations for Firmino are kind of not what they are for Mane and Salah, so him not bagging as many goals as those two isn't a surprise, whereas Mane, really, there are a couple of times where I felt like he did score a goal, and I was like, oh, he'll kick on now. And he just didn't. He never, ever really picked up that form. I think at one point he had that row with Salah over taking a penalty as well and stuff, so... You know, just a really, really poor year from someone who had been electric the last two or three years. Like, he'd been one of the most exciting players in the league alongside Salah. So I think that was a really surprising decline.
Yeah, it was. He probably was one of the best players, if not the best player last season for Liverpool Football Club in a season where they won the league, which is no mean feat. And, you know, he showed little sparks of good form. And again, another guy who's got a Player of the Month nomination right at the end of the season. For his contribution to Liverpool in their run-in. But yeah, there was times this season where he couldn't, what was it, Ballon d'Or with a banjo. I personally don't think he's alone in that. I think I do think there was other Liverpool players definitely involved in that kind of dip in form. we've talked about Trent before in this podcast and how he's had a bit of an uneven season, to say the least. But Sadio Mane for the majority of the season was disappointing. Like, I hope he can recover some of that form because he's still young. He's still relatively young. And he, you know, has a couple of years left in his prime, I think. So whether that's at Liverpool or at another club, I think I would like to see him succeed again and really drag his form back from where it is at the moment. I think a lot of that has to do with the club and the way it is. So I think he can recover from it. But yeah, it was a big turn. You know, if it was a player you could have picked, you could have predicted, I don't think it was Sadio Mane that would have such a dip in form this season.
Yeah, whereas when I look at these four strikers now, I do think Timo Werner is the one that we cut, just because the argument for Aguero and Mane is stronger. Like, yeah. Werner was surprisingly bad. I expected better from him, but as we mentioned in part two, like, he could become a Champions League winner. He could have the last laugh. So, you know, for that reason, I'd probably cut him from this.
And I'd also cut Sadio Mane because, you know, he still has time to recover it in his career. And there is a greater forces, you know, there are dark forces at play. There are greater forces at play at Liverpool than necessarily just his form that was resulting in his bad performances. There was like a complete collapse in their overall shape and the way they play football, in the player and the personnel that they had on the field, and that can have enormous effects up the field in the attack. And, you know, there are certain sets of man you can point to and say that it's not just my fault that I'm missing open goals.
And then the other couple of players that we're looking at here for being surprisingly bad this season, Antti Martial and Raheem Sterling, two players in a similar position again, two more forward players, surprisingly poor. Which one of those was the bigger surprise for you?
Personally, with Antti Martial, I don't see him as a massive disappointment or a massive change in form. He kind of has this in him. He has the ability to be, if you remember his first season under Van Gaal, he has the ability to be fantastic and then be completely anonymous. And I think we saw a lot of that this season. I think he was excellent at the end of last season, if I'm remembering correctly, when the run in for Manchester United against the Champions League. I think he was very, very good for them. But this season, it's just returned to form, if you will, for Antti Martial. That's why I'm not that surprised with it. He just has that kind of streaky nature about him where he can go to great heights and to great depths. And I don't know if is it the club itself at Manchester United, is it the way the team plays, is it the player himself? I don't know what it is, but there is something definitely impacting his ability to keep and maintain a high level of form. And yeah, for that reason, I don't think he's that surprising this season. But yeah, again, it probably is notable to just say how he came from such heights and such optimism at the beginning of the season to be, you know, is he even, like, would you even, he wouldn't even be your first substitute, you know?
Yeah, I'd cut him from the list for this reason, but it does deserve a conversation, especially because he's been injured the last while, so he has been forgotten, I suppose, because of that. But I agree that he is streaky. The fact that it lasted a whole season, I think, is maybe the surprise there, that he never really ever... He had that one good game against Man City in the Etihad that Man United won, or he earned the penalty and generally played quite well. But I think other than that...
He won the penalty against Spurs as well, that they lost 6-1? Or is he just sent off?
Yeah, I think he maybe earned the penalty there as well. But generally speaking, it was a poor season from him. And it disappointed me so, because he's so exciting.
He has the potential.
But I think Raheem Sterling's decline over the season, and it's harsh calling these declines for these people because they can still come good, of course.
Except for Sergio Aguero.
Except for, probably Aguero. Although Barcelona, we'll see.
That'll definitely work out for him.
Yeah, definitely. That's never backfired for Barcelona before, ever. But with Raheem Sterling, you know, he's fallen out with Pep, it seems like. It's just, he's been overrun in the pecking order by Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva, Ike Gundogan, even for playing up front. It's really startling how he's just kind of fallen off the face of the earth there. For a side that's won the league, going to be in a Champions League final, he should be a key part of it, and he's not.
Yeah, like, this one I qualify somewhat. Like, he hasn't had a good season. He played his parts when he's come on, and he's been on the field, and we started matches. I think he has been okay this season. He hasn't had perceptible, like, misses the way he's had in other years. He's been like, oh God, Raheem Sterling should have put that away. He's doing the silly things. He's putting a bit of extra touch on the ball when he doesn't need to. I don't think he's done that this year. I think he doesn't fit into the system that Pep wants to play now, which is a bit slower, a bit more grounded. like a bit not less less counter-attacky from a pure speed point of view. It's more of a working-ish point of view in the counter-attack and kind of exploiting space when it develops on a counter-attack, not necessarily exploiting it and running into it and playing a ball over the top, which is something that Pep and Raheem Sterling were experts at in the last few years. So I don't know if that played into it. It's just the team has changed the way, the style of playing football. It no longer suits them. And it's an unfortunate timing for Raheem Sterling, because I think he's coming in, he's soon to be coming into his peak years, I'd imagine, as a footballer. You know, this guy is probably one of the, you know, Vice England captains at this point, I'd imagine. If Harry Kane isn't playing, he's certainly one of the senior players in the squad, even if he does tend to pick fights with some of the younger players in the squad from time to time. It is a strange one, but I think there's mitigating circumstances around it. I don't know what your views are on his decline this season, or his lack of claim time, or his lack of end product.
Yeah, like it's weird. If you remember before the pandemic started, there was that interview that he had, I can't remember with which paper, it might have been one of the Spanish ones, where, you know, if they were playing Real Madrid in the Champions League, and it seemed like a come and get me play to Real Madrid. And maybe if the pandemic never happened, he ends up at Real Madrid, and the fact that he has unsettled at the club, perhaps, and, you know, probably played a part in his relationship with Guardiola as well, to play him. You know, that's definitely a possibility. So the only other one here that I think is on here because of a negative change in form is Alisson Becker. And even then, I would probably cut him without even much.
Yeah, I think he recovered a lot of his form. I think there was mitigating circumstances both in the Liverpool team, as your side in the Champions League race kind of alleviates a downturn in form for a lot of people.
Yeah, so that leaves us a few players left still who, you know, were much better than we thought they would be. And, you know, we'll start at the top of the list. Emi Martinez left Arsenal. They chose Leno instead, and he went to Aston Villa. And I think he was probably the best goalkeeper in the league this season. It wasn't that big of a surprise, though, given how well he played for Arsenal at the end of last season.
Well, he'd only played it in a handful of games, so that was the risk. That's what Arsenal let him go for, because they couldn't have been confident that he could do the same thing again. Could, you know, keep the form going by a couple of matches, but by an FA Cup winning run. But I think he's proven, he's, like you said, he probably is the best goalkeeper in the league this season. He certainly faced the largest number of shots and kept one of the highest rates of clean sheets in the league. I know Ederson and Man City actually won the Golden Gloves for keeping the highest number of clean sheets, but for someone to do that in 11th place Aston Villa, and especially once Jack Grealish and a few other players in the attacking side of Villa got injured, he was someone who was keeping them together and keeping them in the hunt for, say, that mid-table finish. And you know, probably one of the main reasons why they ended up finishing 11th in the league. Like, I agree that given that he had that game time at Arsenal at the end of last season, he was one of Arsenal's best players in their FA Cup run, would point to the fact that, you know, maybe this isn't that big of a surprise. But if you look pre-COVID, before he'd even played for Arsenal in the first team last season, a guy who was considered probably third choice goalkeeper at a big club, never thinking of, you know, I don't think anyone had thoughts that anyone would sign him, that he would walk into any Premier League side, that he would be probably a better goalkeeper than Arsenal are left with this season. I don't think anyone would have thought that. And if you bear that in mind, it probably is one of the biggest shocks of the season, that this guy who was a third-choice goalkeeper probably is the best keeper in the league and probably is going to be Argentina's number one going into the next World Cup.
The next one, like I think we keep Martinez on the list for now, but I think we cut Mikel Antonio, a player I think...
Yeah, like...
He was as good as I thought he would be, I suppose. Like he ended last season really well. It was probably the most informed striker at the end of last season, and then had a pretty decent season this year.
Yeah, I don't want to say I expected him to do as well as he did and be a guy that really terrified a lot of defenses. Like he was one of the hardest forwards to read. He has strength, he has speed, he has a finishing ability. He has this nuisance ability as well, which is often something that's overlooked, and it's something some of the best strikers have. Something that's like he's always running at you, he's always doing something, he's always active in either pressing or closing down or just being around. And I think he came to a new level this season, and he really added a bit of end product to it, and was given the confidence of his manager, which is something he's lacked in previous campaigns. And I think, you know, you know, he used to be paid a right back. You remember that? Like, it's not too long ago that he was. So he's come on a lot, but yeah, I don't think you can say it's the biggest turn up for the books, considering where he was the end of last season.
I always thought playing him at right back was a bit of a weird choice, because he's displayed a lot of talent up front, and I think this was just the year where he kind of put everything together, which he deserves a lot of credit for, but wasn't entirely surprising either. The other names on this list, Kelechi Iheanacho and Patrick Bamford, the two strikers, which of those do you think was more surprising?
I think it has to be Iheanacho, like a guy that was not surplus to requirements, but if an offer had come in from a lower in the division club last year or from abroad last season, he would have been gone. And I'd say if it wasn't for COVID, he probably would have been gone. And a guy that didn't play any, I don't think he started a match till when, January or February this season. Like he had a good half the season without even getting on the field from the start. He comes in, he, as we said about Jamie Vardy earlier, he kind of picked up the slack that Jamie Vardy was creating by not scoring and not contributing enough goals in the team. He also came into a Leicester City side that was really ravaged by injury at that point and continued to be for the rest of the season, if we're going to be honest, and carried them from not strength to strength, but kept them alive in the Champions League race. And I think that came completely out of nowhere. I don't think he's shown that quality. I don't think he's ever really shown the quality he's shown the second half of the season. And I think he is a top Premier League striker now, where even when he was at Man City, I never, you know, while he may be at the level of Gabriel Jesus, I don't think he was ever, you know, Sergio Aguero, a real competition for him at that club. And I don't think until now he's been a real competition for Jamie Vardy at Leicester City. He's always been a backup. But now I think he is. Patrick Bamford, we've always said he's a competent, good pro. I think he works in this system at Leeds United. I think he showed that last season. I think the fact that even last season, when there was better options necessarily available for Marcelo Bielsa in terms of the loan market and getting strikers from the Premier League, he chose to stick with Bamford. And I think that paid dividends this season, and the system works for him. He plays well in it. And for that reason, I don't think it's a big shock as Iheanacho. I think it is a bit of a surprise that he managed to continue his championship form into the Premier League, but we have seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know with this one. I think I'm still skeptical if Iheanacho is just on a bit of a hot streak, or if this is him kind of finding a new level that he can sustain.
Yeah.
The fact that it was only in the second half of the season. Obviously, he wasn't even playing in the first half, so it's hard to really score when you're not playing. But the fact that it was only in the second half of the season, you know, it was probably only because of injuries that he got back into the team, really. Jose Perez as well dropped off, which kind of opened up some space in the team. Whereas Patrick Bamford did, he was so bad when he played in the Premier League before, you know, and he never really...
Chelsea legend Patrick Bamford. That
he never really looked like stepping up, though, when he was at Leeds. Like, there were times where he was like the most abused player on the Leeds team because he kept missing chances, and that was in the Championship. And then the fact that he actually does come up and he gets, what was it, 16 league goals this season? Like, I thought that was pretty impressive. And a lot of what he did is what made Leeds so comfortably mid-table in the division. You know, if they come up and he's not scoring, then, you know, they could end up getting not quite dragged into a relegation battle because those teams are so bad. But, you know, they maybe end up finishing 12th or 13th.
Yeah. You need a goal scorer. You need a goal scorer to survive in the league. And Bamford was that this season out. And that was a surprise. I don't know. I just feel Iheanacho was a bigger one. He came from nowhere. He wasn't playing. Like, I think that's case in point. Bamford was playing last season. So, you know, by the law of averages, he probably would have eventually scored a few goals if he played every match. And that's how it transpired. And with Iheanacho, he wasn't playing any matches. Injury had to be his way into the team. And when he got in there, he didn't let it go. I thought he led from by example. He was vocal on the field. He showed character in a way that I hadn't seen from him before. And even when the last day, he was the guy that was really trying. Like, I know Vardy was as well, but he was really working that, you know, to try and get them into the Champions League in a way that I think it shows promise for Leicester in the future if they hold on to Iheanacho.
Looking at it now, though, I probably cut both of them.
Yeah, overall, I'm not saying I think Iheanacho is a pretty big shock, but I think there might be other ones in the list yet.
Well, we talk about Iheanacho kind of coming out of nowhere, but the way Jesse Lingard came out of nowhere, I think, was a much bigger surprise because he just looked so off at Man United.
You know,
he wasn't even like he reduced minutes last season, but he had literally not played a single Premier League minute up until January when he left. Like, that was how far down the pecking order he'd gone. You know, you've often brought up that moment in, I think it was the Everton game where they lost 4-0. Yeah. Where
one more time, Jesse, and you're off. Yeah.
Yeah, yell at him from the touchline, one more time and you're off. Like, that was a pretty low point for him. And he had a lot of personal issues going on off the pitch as well, which seemed to impact him as well. So then when he shows up at West Ham on loan, I don't think any of us are expecting him to be a key part of the team that is pushing for a Champions League position. And scoring some really nice goals, being involved in some really nice play.
Leading from the front. Really good. Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is he played like the guy that won an FA Cup for Manchester United in the second half of the season. Like, there were mitigating circumstances, obviously, behind his dip in form and his lack of minutes at Manchester United, and we don't know the whole story behind that. But certainly, when he came to West Ham, we did not expect this to happen. Like, it actually smelled like a bad transfer at the time. It smelled like, what is David Moyes doing getting someone from Manchester? Is Manchester United past back in, and what is he going to do? And is this just going to, like, is this West Ham wasting money when they have an opportunity to do well this season? And it completely was the opposite of that. It's someone who he brought in, gave a new lease of life to the team, gave a bit of energy and zip into that attacking midfield zone, which had kind of become a bit stale, and teams had kind of figured it out. It was a bit of a battering ram before Lingard got in there. He added a bit more guile and a bit more, you know, intelligence into that attacking line. And he started producing end product, which is something I don't think he's done to that level even at Manchester United in terms of his goal and chance creation, as well as the actual goals he's put into the back of the net as well. And the importance of those goals, they tended not to be 4-0, the fourth goal in a 4-0 rout. They came to be the first goal in a game, which is often the most important. And he did that time and time again, I think, for West Ham in the second half of the season, was one of the primary drivers towards them getting towards a Champions League berth.
Yeah, and I think for that, we have to keep him on this list for now. And there's two more here that I'm looking at that I think we should just cut cutthroatly. The EK Gundogan and John Stones improvement. Like, I think a lot of that was to do with the way Man City changed. And it suited them more so than though. Like, obviously, you know, they had to step up, but, you know, John Stones ended up moving into a much more solid defensive shape that ended up helping him kind of, it hit his weaknesses a bit more and a bit better. And then with Gundogan, he had that goal burst around Christmas time that was crucial to Man City's winning run, but he was being allowed to get into those positions where he could score those goals more often. That caused that. Obviously, both players did quite well to take advantage of that, but given what we have on the list, I think we should cut both of those.
Yeah, like, just to give a shout out to Gundogan, and like, really, Manchester United completely changed the way they played. They moved him forward from being a much more, you know, being a part of a pivot with two in it of a defensive leaning thought, to being a guy in the centre midfield to, you know, to move on either end, to run into the box, to really be part of the fundamental part of the attack, and to be given the license to hold on to the ball and to dribble a bit, which is something that Pep doesn't always give to his midfielders. So it is definitely something you have to point at and say, wow, this guy has kicked on. He's added goals to it, because he only played 28 league matches. And he managed to get 13 goals, which for a guy who's never managed double figures, I don't think, in the Premier League, is something to be, you know, impressed by. And it's someone who's 30 as well. He's not like someone who's just breaking into the peak of his career. He has been around for a good amount of years, and he's finally started to show why Pep and a lot of managers in the past have trusted so much in him, including Jurgen Klopp, and thought he was been such a great player. John Stones as well. Yeah, I think it helps to have Ruben Dias alongside you. It helps to have really experienced players who are able to cover mistakes around you, and to have a fairly solid midfield in front of you as well that moves in a tight space together. They all stayed very tight and very together this season, and I think that played to John Stones' strength, like you said. But I don't think it's a turn up for the books for the most expensive or one of the most expensive English defenders in history to actually put in a good season.
And then that just leaves Luke Shaw as the only other one we discussed. He's the fourth left on this list. Do you think he gets into this top three? You know, he has had a surprisingly good season.
Good season. Is it surprising though? This is England's certain. Well, might be England's certain left back. We'll see how the next couple of weeks goes in terms of injury and everything else. But you know, he's a guy that, you know, was suffering under the previous management. A guy that was ridiculed often in public by the previous management, and under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, was, you could almost say, given a new lease of life, and has stayed relatively injury free. and has really kept out some of the younger players in Manchester United from getting into that team. A guy that, I don't know, does he look better because you have Wan-Bissaka on the other side and it's someone who doesn't necessarily have the attacking chops of Luke Shaw, and it makes him look better in the attacking side because they favour that side when they're building attacks? I don't know. I think he's been solid this season. In a year where we haven't had amazing left-backs in the Premier League, he is someone that has been competent, and I think that might make him seem better than he actually was. But you know better than I would.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, go back to the start of the season even, like, Man United signed Alex Telles from Porto, and that very much seemed like he was not just going to be competition for Luke Shaw, but he was going to be a starting figure over Luke Shaw. And then just suddenly, out of nowhere, Luke Shaw just kind of looked so much more confident on the ball, built up a great relationship on the left wing with Marcus Rashford, was getting into great positions, was doing very well defensively as well. You know, I don't think it is necessarily just that Man United look better on their left because Aaron Wan-Bissaka's up and too good on the right, because Wan-Bissaka has improved on the right. Like, I think they've become a bit more balanced there by the end of the season. And Luke Shaw was legitimately, like, hitting in some really good passes, creating a lot of nice chances. And it was surprising because, you know, he wasn't doing that 12 months ago even. Like, he was building up that relationship with Rashford, but when Rashford wasn't there, he was looking a little lost. You know, him and Martial didn't click together at all. Him and even Paul Pogba weren't clicking at all, or whoever. Mason Greenwood on the left even, or Daniel James. Like, those partnerships weren't working. And then, you know, Luke Shaw came off worse because of it when Rashford did get injured. So that when he came back at the start of the season, Man United looked poor. He was still even one of the better players in the team. And then as the team got better, you know, he also was starting to get a better output, because the players around him were starting to do better. Then when you consider Martinez, Lingard, Aguero, I do see the argument for cutting Luke Shaw, though. Because he is still a quality left-back. He just suffered from a few poor years there, from poor management, as you said, under Mourinho. And this is the Luke Shaw that we were expecting when he was 18. Like, this is ultimately where we expected him to be. So maybe in that sense, it's not too surprising.
Yeah, like, I think we must revisit the whole, that golden generation of Southampton youth prospects and how they fared in the long term, because there's a lot of them out there, and they may not be as, like, a lot of them have won trophies, in fairness to them, but not a lot of them have really reached that quality high that you might have expected to, especially, like, in terms of international berths. Not a lot of them have done that. But yeah, I think I'd be happy with your decision there.
So that leaves Sergio Aguero, Emiliano Martinez, and Jesse Lingard. Who do you think?
Yeah, like, I think Aguero was obviously the biggest, you know, underperformer this season, given what he's produced in the past. I think Emi Martinez, from a defensive point of view, is a good story, you know, and it shows you that if you keep trying, you eventually can get to the top. If you hang in there and work very hard and stay true to your beliefs, you'll get there. But yeah, it's really Jesse Lingard is the big shock of the season, because it's a guy who didn't play a minute of football till after Christmas and turned into, you know, what is like an England international performance, and, you know, could well get into the starting 11 of an England in midfield, given that he has outstanding relationships with other players who are likely going to be in that starting 11, including Declan Rice, Luke Shaw, maybe Marcus Rashford. And he knows all these players intrinsically, and that's really going to count to him, and we couldn't have at all predicted that even six months ago. That was never a thought, that Jesse Lingard had that in him. And, you know, if the season kept going, he could have easily been in line with what would have been a fairly underwhelming player of the season award, as it turned out to be, but he is someone that could definitely be in there.
So it all boils down to this, the best player award, the one that I suppose in the official stakes, I suppose, is probably the one that everyone talks about the most. And that's the reason why we kind of left it last here. Don't have as long a nominee list either, because really we're talking about the best players this year. I think we've done a good job discussing everything else around it. And now there's just a few left to talk about, Andrew.
Yeah, like... It's been a weird season. Like, it isn't the most underwhelming list, and I'm thinking when Ryan Giggs won at that time, it's a kind of Lifetime Achievement Award. It's up there. Like, we've had good players this season. We've had excellent performances this season. And we've had surprises this season. But have we had an overall, like, wow, this guy is amazing? We haven't had a Cristiano Ronaldo, not a Thierry Henry, and Alan Shearer, a Roy Keane, a Michael Owen. You know, we haven't seen that this season. But what we have seen is a lot of good players performing to the levels that you'd hope they would perform to, and in some cases exceeding those expectations.
So without further ado, let's look at the best player nominees. Harry Kane, Mohamed Salah, Kevin De Bruyne, Ruben Diaz, Ike Gundogan, Jack Grealish, Bruno Fernandes, and Son Heung-min. Where do you want to start?
I think we started at the bottom of that list with Son Heung-min, a guy that was outstanding at the beginning of the season. He did taper off a bit, and it's to be expected given he's basically been playing football consistently, constantly for the last 3 or 4 years without a break, apart from the lockdown period where he wasn't playing. He's fantastic. I think he's joint third in the goal scoring rankings. I think he is at the end of the Premier League season. Which was pretty excellent for a guy that isn't technically a centre forward, although he has, as his career's gone on, played closer and closer to that front line, and definitely just plays off the front man now and almost plays in front of Harry Kane at times for Spurs. But yeah, he's a guy that, while again having another excellent season, I don't think he achieved the level of player of the season.
Yeah, that's. I think you're right. Like, he is the first, but he is the first that we should cut from this list. And I think he was just overshadowed by a few other players, particularly even in at Spurs. The next one that I want to look at is Gundogan, who we discussed in the last category. You know, it's surprising how good he's been this year, but you know, when we're looking at the best player this year, he had a hot streak in the middle of the season and was generally pretty solid for the rest of the year. But I don't think he was the best player this year.
No, he wasn't. He's someone that you can shout out at, and like, as a guy that can kind of contribute a huge amount to your team and perhaps even run a game, he has come on leaps and bounds this season and really been excellent. But yeah, he's not someone I would say is player of the season. He's someone I like to watch, and I think I've liked to watch more and more this season, which is something I never thought I'd say last season or previous years. He was always very functional to me, but this season he really has become a lot more important. And you know, when you're an important player in the league winning team, you must be doing something right.
And I think those two cuts are probably the easiest ones that we had to make. The rest of them are tough. Who do you put forward next?
To remove from this list, yeah, it starts getting a bit tricky now, because not necessarily because, well, I think, yeah, Jack Grealish, I think, is the next one on my list to remove.
No, I completely disagree.
Why do you think that Jack Grealish deserves to be in the conversation for the top three best players of the season?
I think Jack Grealish has been one of the best players this season, easily. He's been he's transformed his game by improving in every aspect. He's like, obviously Aston Villa have improved themselves, but I think a lot of that has come through Jack Grealish. Like, they went from being almost relegated, it was before a technological failure, they go down last season, to, you know, he gets injured near the end of the season and they lose a bit of form. If that doesn't happen, they probably qualify for Europe. He had probably some of the best individual performances this season. He was the most exciting to watch. He had the best chance creation stats of anyone in the league. He was creating more chances than anyone else in his side. That's not very good. Well, I say not very good, but it's not like Man City level. I think if he ends up going to a Man City or a Man United, he adds a completely new dimension to that side, and obviously and would make, I'd fear a Man City with Jack Grealish in that side. He would add a completely another level to that team. I think he's the only one on this list that doesn't play for one of the big sides. I think that is a testament to how good he's been this season. And for that, I'd keep him on this list for now.
Okay. I'll waver to you in that regard. A guy who only had 16 direct goal scoring or goal, 10 goals, 6 or 10 assists, 6 goals. I know his season was a bit curtailed by injury. Only managed, I think he missed about 10 or 12 matches through injury this season. So, you know, that is saying something, that he managed to do that for a team that ended up finishing in the mid-table, and perhaps it would have finished even higher if it wasn't for his injury absence. So yeah, I'll give it to you.
It's just like when you look at the, not to labor the point, but like when you look at the, he only ends up with 6 assists, but this comes back to, I suppose, my whole greater philosophical point that looking at the assist table is not a good metric of deciding who are the best creators in the league. Like, if you actually look at the amount of chances that he creates, like passes or dribbles that lead to shots, he is only led by Kevin De Bruyne in the entire league, whereas someone like Harry Kane, who does have the most amount of assists, is actually really far down the list on of players who actually create chances that lead to shots, that lead to goals even. So for that, I think, you know, I suppose we should talk about Harry Kane now. Harry Kane has had probably his best season, despite Tottenham having their worst Harry Kane season. It sounds paradoxical, but I think that is the case here.
Yeah, probably. It's a funny world that we live in, I suppose.
Because, like, Harry Kane has got the most goals. You know, he dragged Tottenham to 7th place. He's been fantastic this year. Like, he got that break last year when the league was paused because of lockdown. I think that benefited him greatly. He looked sharper than he has done for quite a while. He remained generally fit for the entire season. I don't remember him being out for that long or at all, really, through injury, which is the first time we could say that about Kane in the season in a long time.
Yeah.
He's carried that team. Like, him and Son had the best partnership of anyone in the league this season, and Kane was a big contributor to that. Like, Son has been great, but I think Kane has been just another level this year. I think this has probably been his best season at Tottenham.
I find that hard. There's bits of the arguments I find hard to disagree with, you know, given the rest of the team that is around him, given how poor the team performed at times, given how he dragged them along with Son through a lot of games this season, and really was the only good thing about a lot of their games this season, and the reason why they came from behind in certain instances as well. I can't disagree with it. I just think, you know, when he was younger, he might have been a bit more of an exciting prospect and scored more goals, but now his game has changed a bit and he's brought in more assists with him. He is the first player in, I think, a long time that we've had the top goal scorer and top assist maker being the same player, which kind of shows you how important he was to Tottenham's overall effort. When you look at their actual total amount of goals they've scored this season, it's not that great if you take out the top two players in that list. But yeah, I think he's had an outstanding season. It's hard to bet against him, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know whether to cut him now or give him the award, honestly. It could go either way. What
I think you have to keep him in there because he's just done so well. Like, Mo Salah, similarly, in a season where Liverpool's had a bad year and Liverpool didn't play particularly well, Mo Salah was the shining light in that. He was the guy that kept everything going. They kept looking good in games where Liverpool were either losing or playing badly, and he scored important goals for them. He kept the goal scoring going at times of the season when you thought that Liverpool couldn't do anything, and he kept them alive and he kept them in that race for Champions League at the crucial times when perhaps he had thought Liverpool didn't have a hope in hell of getting into the top four. He kept them going. And for that alone, I think he deserves to be at least in with a shout of this award. I wouldn't eliminate him just yet, but I might eliminate him after we get through the next couple of players.
Yeah, like, I do see the similarities between the season Kane and Salah's had, but I think Kane has been better this year just because...
Yeah, if you just look at the importance of your overall team, you know, Kane carried the team in a way that Salah didn't necessarily have to.
And Salah had a few dry spells there as well where, you know, if he does continue his form, and we're asking a lot of him because he was very good this year, and we are getting a bit nitpicky here, but if he carries that form through those dry spells and he does actually pick up those goals, then, you know, Liverpool aren't in the top four race. They're near City and they're not quite making it a title race, but they're comfortably second.
Yeah, like a guy, he still managed 22 goals this season with dry spells, which is pretty impressive overall. But yeah, you're right. I am more inclined to remove him in place of Harry Kane. But it's not to say I wouldn't have him near the top of my top five. So,
what about the Man City duo of De Bruyne and Diaz?
De Bruyne is City's most important player in terms of an attacking sense. He's a guy that makes him tick. I know there's a lot of people who may think that he's not the best midfielder in the world, or he's not as important as, you know, his swashbuckling Steven Gerrard type antics make him seem when he hits, you know, 40-yard diagonal balls or blasts a long-range shot into the top corner or makes a, you know, a tackle that ends up being a yellow card, but it's for the team. So, yeah, But Kevin De Bruyne is the beating heart of a team that's, you know, he's effectively the captain. I know Fernandinho is the captain, but he's the captain most of the time for a team that's won the Premier League, won the League Cup, got to an FA Cup semi-final, is in the Champions League final. And he's done it year after year after year. I know he didn't quite make the top assist this season or goal creation this season, as you know, that, or the chance creation. I know you had Kane and Grealish and other players like that ahead of him. But he is a guy that is of utmost importance, and he has adjusted the way he's played this season to fit that and still continued to produce at the highest level. And for that reason, I think he may, while not being the best player this season, he should be acknowledged as one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I think of the six that's left, I do maybe cut him first, though, because obviously he's a great player, but I do think he's starting to wind down just a little bit.
I don't know.
He's still a really good player. I expect him to have a really big impact on Saturday in the Champions League final. But
Let me put it to you this way then. Bruno Fernandes is the closest player that's still on this list that's to Kevin De Bruyne. Which player would you rather have in your team?
See, I don't think that is how you define the best player in the league.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think Kevin De Bruyne, you put him into this Manchester United team. Do United do better or worse than with Bruno Fernandes?
I don't think they do that much better.
But they do better.
But I don't think that's a signal that Kevin
De Bruyne. You put Bruno Fernandes in this Man City team. Do they do better or worse? I don't think they do better with Bruno Fernandes.
But I don't think that's a signal that Kevin De Bruyne has had a better season than Bruno Fernandes. And you know, I probably also cut. I'd cut both of them probably.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Bruno's been really good this season. You know, he carried on the momentum of the year before. He had a fantastic first half of the season where he was basically Man United's. He was their goals and their assists for quite a while. He was the beating heart of that team. I think as he dropped off, the rest of the team picked up form and kind of cut up the slack that was there, which I think is good for Man United. You know, long term, it's good that they're not as focused on Bruno as they were. And you know, it should be acknowledged just how good Fernandes was at the start of the season. He was absolutely fantastic. But I cut both of them just because, you know, I think they're both great players. You know, we're talking about the fifth and sixth best players in the league this season. You know, that's still really good. But you know, I think the way Man City play now, there's less of a reliance on De Bruyne to do his thing. You know, there was a time there where the way Man City played, it was no one's allowed to make more than a 5-yard pass except De Bruyne, who can do whatever he wants. And we were seeing some absolutely magical play out of that. Some of the passes he was doing were just out of this world. That's less the case now. He's still obviously a fantastic player. He's still a dominant force. He is starting to get a bit old. He's hit 30 now, I think, or he's 29 now. So he is starting to hit the end of his peak. And I think, you know, he's had better seasons. You know, there were years there where him and Mo Salah were competing for Player of the Year, and it was impossible to choose between the two of them. They were two of the best players in the world after Messi. I don't think that's quite the case. Like, whoever we give the winner of this award to is not the best player in the world.
No.
You know, I think the general standard of the top player has maybe fallen, but the general average of 2 to 10 has gotten better, and that's why this is so hard.
I think that's fair. So let's talk about the only player we haven't talked about yet, I suppose.
Well, do we cut De Bruyne and Bruno Fernandes then? We're going to have to cut someone.
Yeah, I think we talk about Ruben Diaz and then we'll make a final call and we'll do a wholesale cut. Because Ruben Diaz is the only player we haven't spoken about. He's the only non-attacking player, I think, in this list. He is a guy that's new to the Premier League. He's a guy that I don't think any of us really knew a great deal about. You know, you might have heard the name if you followed football in the Iberian Peninsula. But other than that, maybe you thought he was talented, but other than that, you maybe didn't know a great deal about the guy. And certainly didn't expect him to walk into the Manchester City team and make it that much stronger. You know, between him and Ferran Torres, I personally thought Ferran Torres would be the bigger signing for Man City this season, and it didn't turn out that way at all. Ruben Diaz has been a rock at the centre of that defence. He has proven to be every bit as important as Virgil van Dijk was for Liverpool last season, even though he's a fair bit of a different player. He is a guy that energises the Man City defence, that provides them with that cover, so that more technically gifted players like John Stones or you know, give Kyle Walker a guy, you know, let him have a 40-yard run and attack and contribute to an attacking play. Ruben Diaz is there to cover up for them if something goes wrong. And, you know, he's been almost irreplaceable for Man City this season. I can't think they would have won the league. I definitely don't think they would have got to a Champions League final. They wouldn't have got past PSG without him. And he is someone that is really been a game changer for them and kicked them back up to the level they were at a couple of years ago, even with the transitional phase they've been going to. He is someone that made them that cutting edge and given them that cutting edge this season, and really played easily the best player in his position in the league, easily the best defender in the league this season. And, you know, he probably gives a run for those attacking players' money because, you know, even though he doesn't score the goals, he is the most, if he doesn't play, that negatively impacts the whole Man City team. And I don't know if Kevin De Bruyne's absence, if, you know, Jack Grealish from Villa, if Bruno Fernandes from Manchester United, if Mo Salah from Liverpool, or if Harry Kane from Spurs, if losing any of those one players has much of an impact on the team as Man City losing Ruben Diaz would.
I feel like this is where I do you remember that time in wrestling when Vince McMahon lift off the cloak and was like, "It's me, Austin. It was me all along." I feel like this is my moment here where I admit that I think I agree with a lot of what you said about Diaz, but I think I cut him from this list just because I do think he is replaceable at Man City. Like, he's a really good player. He's really good. But, you know, they have Aymeric Laporte on the bench. They have Nathan Ake on the bench.
Spanish international Aymeric Laporte.
Yeah, they have John Stones alongside him. I think Man City have become a lot more defensively solid, not just because they signed Ruben Diaz. You know, they still conceded 5 goals against Leicester that time. They were still losing a couple of games at the start of the season when they still kind of tried to play their way. It was when they changed their style of football that it started to suit both centre-backs more. And I think there's a great partnership there between Diaz and Stones, and I think Diaz is the better player. And I think, you know, this isn't a knock against defenders. I do think defenders deserve to be in this conversation. I think Virgil van Dijk deserved to win the award last season or the year before instead of Mo Salah or Jordan Henderson. You know, I think Virgil van Dijk was way more important. But, you know, I just, like, there's good defenders at Man City. They spend a lot of money on him. You know, when I look at the rest of the players there, like, I think Harry Kane is more important to Tottenham. I think Jack Grealish was more important than Aston Villa. They didn't win the league, though. It just felt like there was a bit of a consensus come late April. Like, oh, actually, Ruben Diaz is really good. And then suddenly there was this groundswell of support. Mm. You know, I don't think it was something where he ever was too, like, he had really good individual performances himself. Like, he even got, a few Man of the Match awards, I believe. But, and I do agree that they wouldn't have got to the Champions League final without him. I think he is that much better than Laporte that they only get to a semi-final. But
yeah,
over the course of a league season, they still win the league with Laporte or Stones or Ake and Stones or Ake and Laporte, whatever combination of centre-back. Because, like, and this is why we credited Pep with the Manager of the Year, is, you know, he changed the way that they play to, in a really smart way, that took advantage of the fact that people aren't really doing as much running. They aren't as fit as they were due to COVID struggle ball, as I've heard it being called. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of the credit to Man City's success this season does come down to Pep Guardiola more than any individual player. You know, they're all fantastic players, but I don't think there's any one that stands out in this team. But because they've won everything, there's this kind of need to figure out who the best player is, but I think actually they're all just really good. And I do think Ruben Diaz is one of those really good players, and so is Kevin De Bruyne, but I would cut both of them from this list, and Bruno Fernandes, and my three would probably be Jack Grealish, Mo Salah, and Harry Kane.
Like, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I do think it's a lot harder to quantify what a defender does and contributes to a team and the impact or lack of their presence could have on a team compared to an attacking player, where it's a lot more evident in terms of their contribution directly to chances and goals and everything like that. His numbers are excellent. The way he's enabled them to play that pressing football in a tight space when they've had to do it this season. I know it's a slow COVID football and it does change things. I'll give it to you because I don't think he has a chance of winning best player of the year, and I think it's either that or bust at this point. So I'm fine with eliminating those, and our top three being Jack Grealish, Harry Kane, and Mo Salah. But I don't necessarily agree with Grealish being in there, because I do like him as a player. I do think he's a very good player and a very important player for Aston Villa, but I don't think he's in the top three best players in Premier League by any stretch of the imagination.
Jack Grealish, I came into this thinking Jack Grealish is going to win, if I'm honest.
He can't win. He's not that good. He isn't that good. He's not.
No, but he is, though. He is.
He isn't.
And we almost probably should have included him in the last category, because he's gotten so much better. Like, this is a team that, it's so difficult to have a mid-table team, be run through one player the way that Aston Villa are run through Jack Grealish.
It happens.
But when was the last time a player this good was playing in a mid-table team that brought them from 17th to almost relegation into, if he doesn't get injured for those 6 weeks, they probably qualify for Europe?
That was
how much he improved.
That's probably the last time that happened.
But Jamie Vardy was in a team that also had N'Golo Kante and Riyad Mahrez and Kasper Schmeichel.
Yeah, but I think the previous season, Vardy was the reason why they didn't get relegated. His goals were the reason for it. There is probably examples of it, but I know what you're saying, but if he had pace, Jack Grealish would be that player.
I don't think it's about that, though.
He has qualities in certain areas, but he's lacking qualities in other crucial areas that stop him going to that next level. I agree what you're saying, he's a fantastic player. You know, Robbie Earnshaw, great player, except in the Premier League, even though he did score hat-tricks in the Premier League. He is a great player to a certain level, and then that level tapers off and he's not able to do it anymore. You know, Jack Grealish isn't going to get into this England first 11. He may not even get into the England squad.
He's getting in the England squad unless he's not fit like that. He should be in the starting 11. I think it's a toss-up between him, Phil Foden, and Jadon Sancho for
We didn't even mention Phil Foden in this conversation, but Phil Foden has better numbers than him this season. I know he's playing for a better side.
Has he, though? He hasn't scored as many goals, hasn't got as many assists, hasn't got as many chances created.
He's got more goals than assists.
No, he doesn't. He's only scored 9 and 5 as opposed to 10 and 6. So, you know, that's not as many.
Yeah, but it's not 6 goals Grealish scored and 10 assists.
Oh, is it 6 and 10? It's still, it's 16 to 14.
Okay.
Jack Grealish is playing in a worse team than Phil Foden is.
I acknowledge that, but then there's levels to players.
If Jack Grealish signs for Man City or Man United, they run away. Well, Man City run away with the league, Man United become league contenders. Like, he is a quality player, and he has improved so much on last season. Like, last season he was good, and he was the reason why Aston Villa didn't go down, but now he's the reason that they're in contention places.
Yeah, like, He is of exceptional quality, and he was easily their best player, and their team ran through him. And, you know, there was other players, obviously Ollie Watkins,
Martinez, players as we discussed.
Yeah, that they kept, you know, Villa where they are this season, and really were the reason why they moved up the league. But yeah, I understand what you're saying around Grealish. He is not the best player in the league. He's not. Like, Harry Kane alone, even though I'm not the biggest fan of Harry Kane, I can acknowledge that he had a much better season this season in a team that struggled almost as much as Aston Villa did. They certainly had a much more tumultuous time off the field and to an extent on the field than Aston Villa did this season. And a lot of times fielded worse teams, worse 11s, and definitely played worse football than Aston Villa this season. Yet Harry Kane showed up. Yet Harry Kane scored goals. Yet he gave assists. Yet he created chances, held up the ball, won defensive headers at corners. He did all of that this season in a terrible team. And for that reason alone, he's a better player for this season and a more deserving player of the year. Mo Salah, a guy who played, I know Liverpool are a much better side, but this guy cling, even with bad patches of form this season, in a season where they were playing 2 matches a week, which Jack Grealish wasn't, and could have the breaks between matches, he held that Liverpool attack together and did his utmost to keep them scoring goals when nobody else was contributing. And, you know, I think both of those players had better years than Jack Grealish, and both of those players would be more deserving of a player of the year.
The argument that you convinced me most on is Harry Kane. I think Harry Kane...
Yeah, I think Harry Kane has it. He's hit scoring the most goals, giving the most assists. Mm. And, you know, I know you have your qualms about the assists, but in terms of Harry Kane, they really were him just winning the ball and playing the pass or delaying the pass to the opportune time for Son to tap it in. Or whatever it was, but Harry Kane did that this season, definitely. And I think if not for him and obviously Son Heung-min, Spurs would have been in a lot more danger this season of having a really poor season and being closer to relegation places. I think without Harry Kane this season, yeah, the things could have got very bad for Spurs.
Yeah, I agree. Like it was a toss up for me between Jack Grealish and Harry Kane. So to give it to Harry Kane, I think is deserving.
I just think it's bad. Jack Grealish, like, no, not for me. Like, I do like Jack Grealish as a player. I think he's fantastic. I love the way he plays the game. I love how he brings the ball down and he dribbles with it. It's something that's lost in the modern game. Yet he can still pass. He can shoot. He can create. He plays he plays like a player that we don't see anymore. He doesn't have the physique of a modern footballer. He has no pace as well, which is something is often nice to see.
I just don't think that's that big of a deal. That he's not as quick as a Jadon Sancho or Marcus Rashford or Mo Salah.
It's not a massive deal, but it's what would prevent him, I think, and I fear would prevent him from being onto that next level to be a top Champions League player. And yeah, it's something he doesn't have, and it's a concern. Like, unless he adapts his game in some other way or changes his position, which is quite possible, what would happen if he went into a side like Man City? Like, I could see him slotting into that kind of Ilkay Gundogan role, or at Manchester United slipping into one of the three in midfield role. You know, that's the type of role I see for him in his future, not necessarily as a roaming left inside forward, which is what he's been doing at Villa.
Yeah, so I think Harry Kane is a deserving winner. I'm just going to go through the six categories that we've done now throughout as well and recap what we've decided. It started all the way back on Monday with Best Manager.
A long time ago.
Yeah. I thought they were fun, healthy discussions, even if they ran a little long. Best Manager was won by Pep Guardiola with Brendan Rodgers and David Moyes as runners-up. Best New Player was won by Ruben Diaz with Ollie Watkins and Edinson Cavani as runner-up. Best Goal was given to Eric Lamela for his Rabona strike against Arsenal. The runners-up were Manuel Lanzini versus Tottenham and Bruno Fernandes versus Everton. The Best Surprise was won by the Super League being stuffed, with the runners-up being West Ham, the Champions League contenders, and Brighton conceding a penalty after full-time. And the most surprising change in form was won by Jesse Lingard, with Sergio Aguero and Emiliano Martinez as runners-up. And of course, finally, Best Player won by Harry Kane, with Mo Salah and Jack Grealish as runners-up. Congratulations to all who were nominated. It's just an honour to be nominated, of course.
Obviously. And if you want your awards, do contact us.
Yeah, you know, they have to get to us first, I think, is, you know, they contact us and we'll give them a shout out on the next episode or something, I don't know. but until then, I think that's been a nice recap of the season. The Euros kick off pretty soon and the Champions League as well. The final takes place this weekend. So, of course, we'll be here as well to discuss all those. But until then, thank you for being here, Andrew.
Thank you for having me this season, Jack.
And we'll be back again next year. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then don't forget to tell your family and friends about the show. Spread the word of the Total Football Takeover. The show can also be found on podcast services, including Spotify, by searching Total Football Podcast. You can also subscribe to my own Substack at declanhart.substack.com, where I publish two weekly newsletters that will often go further in depth on topics discussed during our shows. Those pieces can also be found on Medium at medium.com/@cheesyheartbun, H-I-R-T-E. You can also follow Andrew on Twitter at Combon27 and myself at cheesyheartbun. Most of all, thank you for listening, and we hope to be in your download feed next week too. The more the merrier. That's what we always say.